Hello.
Hi.
I'm still getting everything together here, but it's just us, isn't it?
It is. And because our fellow podcasters have decided to do things in real life and not join our weekly conversation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It happens.
I know.
There we go. There we go.
Hey. I suddenly appear. I don't have an OBS screen anymore.
Yay.
I'm on my first cup of tea.
Yeah. I'm on my first Rockstar.
Seriously? You drink Rockstar?
I get it shipped to my house directly. Because it's cheaper than because I used to buy it so much at grocery store at convenience stores. That we crunched the numbers and turned out it's just easier for me to get a monthly shipment of a bunch of Rockstar. And then I do drink it instead of coffee in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now I know. Today I learned.
Yeah.
Something about JJ. I did not know that you drank so much Rockstar.
Yeah. Like you almost see, like you see the videos I'm in, you always see this white can because it's only this one. It's only this one. And it's, you can start figuring it out and you can tell where I am in the day with
by how much which Rockstar can it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Or well by how many there are in your desk or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, now we have a sneaky way of knowing
exactly
what time it is at JJ's house.
So but yeah, so our buddies are doing other stuff today. I figured we could just do a nice little short conversation because I know we do actually have people listening, which is always nice.
We do.
I looked at the stats again and I was like, wait a second. People are actually paying attention to us.
Are there five listeners?
Actually, they're at a zero to it. And there's 50 people. Our last episode actually downloaded and listened to it. According to
y'all need some taste. I guess.
I will say though, a lot of our stuff is lagged, long tail, just like DevRel in general. We do have people listening to things not the week they get released, but after the fact, which I thought was interesting. But we do actually have weekly listeners, so
Well, so. I'm sorry, weekly listeners, that you get to listen to us talk once a week
exactly
or something like that, it's all good. But anyway, how are you? What'd you cook last weekend? That's what I want to know.
So because it's cold here in Austin, we've been, me and my family, we've been revisiting making curries at home. Me and my wife like them a lot, and my girls not so much for obvious reasons because they're little girls.
Because they're young, not because they're young. Girls.
Well, no, I'm saying little girl, like little young, like long, grr. Long, young humans. There you go. Hey, I still haven't finished my Rockstar. I'm still not.
It's okay. 100%. I know. I'm just having fun with you because now I know. Anyway.
But I've been looking into making my own green chili paste. Well, I found a couple of recipes and it turns out I had pretty much everything I needed. Because I bought the canned chili green chili paste or whatever. Which is pretty good. Don't get me wrong, it's fine. Yeah. But I've the engineer in me is like, well, I've learned how to make all these better things now by hand. So why am I using this can of pre-made stuff? Maybe I should do it myself. And I didn't have everything, unfortunately, but I at least have a couple of recipes. So, how about you?
Nice. I made lasagna roll-ups this week. The recipes I make aren't that exciting half the time, but they're tasty. So I did that butternut squash, fake enchiladas, the layered enchiladas. It's butternut squash and We put chicken in it and black beans and salsa. Or no, did I do salsa? No, it's peppers, like bell peppers, all different colors and things like that, and tomato paste. Okay. And a few other things, like you put in spices and stuff like that. And basically you layer enchilada filling, and then, well, this enchilada filling, I have no idea if it's even accurate anymore. But you layer that with whole wheat tortillas and you make basically a lasagna type thing. Oh. It's very tasty and it freezes really well. So I made that, and then I made lasagna roll-ups. I have a dog that's currently making a bed out of stuff behind me. It's really weird. But then I made lasagna roll-ups, which basically is lasagna, except instead of like never having enough ricotta, you take the ricotta, you take the noodle, you lay it out flat, you put ricotta on the inside, and then you roll it up like a jelly roll. You put that in the pan, and then you pour the meat sauce over top of it.
Oh, interesting.
And bake it. It's really good. So yeah. That's like the extent of what I've been cooking lately. Very good. Very tasty. The basics are really good if you can get it right.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Eggs, sausage, and stuff for breakfast was perfect.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
The lasagna roll up sounded a lot like what we used to do for our stuffed shells. Me and my wife's, frankly, our relationship was built off of us cooking these stuffed shells when we were first dating together. It was one of my fondest memories of us, like when we're starting to cook together. We would go to HEB, get the big box, or not big box, but a box of like jumbo shells. I'd never had them in my life. It's something my family never cooked. And Natalie was like, hey, let's try this to do this together. I'm like, all right, let's do it. And We you know, you cook the meat inside, and then you do the ricotta with egg and spinach is what she adds to it.
Yeah,
and then stuff it, and then you throw it in the oven, and you have like three meals out of it, which is great.
Oh yeah. Yes. Like I always loved like the more traditional Italian food. I don't even know if it's tradition. It's tradition in my family. Let me put it that way. Like the more traditional Santa Maria family Italian food, just because it feels like I always get so much food out of it, and I can always freeze it and I can bring it back out, and it's always good. It's just always really good. Exactly. I don't know. Like I could always try all these fancy recipes and try something new, and it's always fun to do that. But the staples of the house are never the fancy recipes. It's always the lasagna roll-ups and the stuffed shells.
Exactly.
You know, the other stuff.
Every time you make that little basic recipe too, you get better at it, and you learn to twist and turn a different knob or dial to tune it in even better the next time. And then all of a sudden you're not even thinking about it. You can just look at your cupboard and be like, ah, okay, I could do this, and then have this much food and feed XYZ, which is exactly what you need to do.
So. Yeah. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about food and comfort and psychology, basically.
Okay.
You know, because especially right now, I think everybody's kind of looking for a little bit of comfort, a little bit of like something's normal somewhere, maybe kind of feeling. So, you know, kind of revisiting those pantry staples. And I don't know, when I first met Landon, I never used recipes. Like I just flat out didn't. I just had stuff in the pantry and I put together a meal. Like it was just, this is what I do. He was so baffled because he's always worked from a recipe. So like, I remember when I went into his kitchen for the first time in his apartment and I opened up a cabinet, he had all of his recipes on the inside of the cabinet taped up.
Oh, neat. Right.
And like, I would sit there, I'd be like, do you, and every time he cooked, he'd pull out a recipe. And I was like, don't you just cook? You do recipes? Like I had a cookbook at home, but it was like Joy of Cooking and like Better Homes and Gardens. Like I always would use it more of as a reference for like, how do I tie that turkey up again in that knot to hold it closed? Right. Oh yeah. That's how I do it. But even when I would do chickens and turkeys, it was just like, oh yeah. So you just kind of make the pocket, you put the butter in, you know, you put the, how much spice? Oh, I don't know. It's about this much. Yeah. Yep. And you know, like I still do that where when I'm measuring spices, I don't measure. I just kind of go, yeah, that's about right. And it goes. And he has to pull out every single, every single measuring cup, every single measuring spoon. I'm like, or you could kind of guess, smell it, taste it. It'll work. I don't know.
So you're telling me you're the artist cook, not the engineer cook.
I guess so. I guess that's a really great way of putting it. Yeah, my degree's in science, but it's like, it's still kind of that's about right.
Fine.
It's not baking. Fine. So baking is precise.
Of course.
Because that's chemistry. So.
That analogy holds up to what I used to call myself as a beer brewer. So I used to brew my own beer, and I did it for a good 15 years. And I won some awards with it too.
Nice.
Like I actually won awards brewing beer, which was surprising. But I had a beer partner who would brew with me more or less every other time or every time really. Uh-huh. He was basically my brew partner. So just like baking bread, you need to taste a little bit of your previous bread to get inspiration for what you're doing for your next one. So when you're brewing beer, you need to be sure to drink a couple beers from your previous batch before you're brewing your next batch. So needless to say, my beer partner would come being like, oh, JJ, you're going to brew some beer? I'll be there in 10 minutes kind of thing. So eventually he actually ended up really learning how to do it and all, and got really into it with me too. But I was the artist beer brewer, and he was the engineer beer brewer. Like he would measure every single thing and like just try to work with it. And I'd be like, fuck it, whatever. Just throw more sugar in there. I don't care. And just kind of,
it'll be fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Just throw more hops. It's fine. We'll be good. It's good. Don't worry about it. He's like, no, Gigi, you got to write all this stuff down. I'm like, I don't fucking care. We got 8 weeks to wait for this damn thing to do anyway. I was like, well, what if this goes bad? I'm like, well, anyway. Well, so we ended up learning to work together and getting good narrative out of it. And as I said, won some awards. But it's just funny. That's how we always describe each other. So I was the artist and he was the engineer. And funny thing is, he was actually in, not an arts space, but he was in not an engineering space, and I was the engineer. And when we took our professional hats off, we were the complete opposite of what we are in life, which was fun.
Well, I think that makes sense. Like if you think about like what we do outside of work, right? So if you're always constantly doing some very, very like detailed work that has to be procedural and it must follow everything, and you have to think through everything very logically, what are you going to do when you get out of work? You don't want to. You're tired of doing that. Let's just like, I don't know, I'm going to paint the room pink. I don't know.
Exactly.
A brush. I'm not going to get it perfect. Who cares? Right.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that there's definitely the psychology of I'm always this way kind of people who are always very precise and things like that. Yep. Get me wrong. But I think like when you get out of work, a lot of times you try to find something that's not necessarily feeling like work.
Exactly.
It's the opposite of work. So, you know, I don't know. I go and I record videos and I talk to people all day long and I, you know, I'm doing all this stuff. I get out of work and everybody's like, oh, let's go do something. I'm like, no.
Nope.
That's people. I don't want to do people right now. Exactly. I want to sit down and read a book.
Exactly.
Oh, it's funny how that works.
It is.
It's very funny how that works.
So you're saying something about comfort in the world right now. So talk to me a little bit more about that. Are we at a space and do you feel like you're at a space or are we as a whole, as a human race? Like we're now in year three, right? We're now in year three.
Yeah.
Now hold on. Before I say any further, before I let you go, I just want to make sure this is clear that remember the, what was it? The flu of a 1918, whatever it was, influenza. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one only lasted 3 years, but they didn't have as much international travel and, ability to infect multiple people. Cause obviously in 1918, it was much harder to travel.
Well,
So is there hope?
I mean, there's always hope. If you don't believe in hope, what do you have left? Right. Like, yeah, I mean, sure. that's the story of Pandora's box. Have you ever heard the story of Pandora's box?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, maybe maybe you should go through it, because there's a possibility someone doesn't know.
Let me get the official write-up of Pandora's box. But the idea is that, so just because I want to make sure I get the story correct, this was a story in Greek mythology. And so the basic idea is
hold on. You don't vote up or down on the song you like? Pandora joke.
Jeez. So bad. So bad, JJ.
There's a little bit of a lag. There's a little bit of a lag there. Anyway, sorry.
You're fine. You're fine. So Pandora's box. The idea is that Pandora had a container. People always joke about what it is, whatever, who cares? But Pandora had a box. And inside of the box were all of the evils that human beings could encounter, whether it's sickness, death, whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that Pandora accidentally opened the box, and out into the world came out all of these things that people didn't really want. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the idea is that the one thing Pandora held on to was hope in that box, because it's the one thing that human beings still need. So, you know, I mean, there's people who will take the very, very pessimistic route of like what exactly that means. Like, oh no, instead Pandora did not release hope, and therefore we all don't have any blah, blah, blah. I mean, hey, it's Greek mythology. You get people taking it and making the most horrible ideas out of it.
That curmudgeon, they need to go pet a cat or a dog. They definitely they need to go do that. They need to.
Except they'll probably tell you, well, but I'm allergic to all of those, and just I don't know. Go do something nice for yourself, or just go lay in bed. I don't know. So anyway, but no, I think there's still hope. I think that there has to be. You got to find something somewhere that is exciting for you. But I don't know, like I keep seeing all the news about not just, you know, the pandemic, and like it's kind of one of those things when you think about the 1918 influenza outbreak, they didn't have all the tools that we have, you know, that we have now, and we're not using them because politics and arguments and and so I think that's the thing that's more depressing than COVID itself, is our reaction to it.
Yeah.
As a group. But I mean, it is getting better, and we're finding ways forward, and we at least can connect over Zoom. Can you imagine if we didn't have anything but a phone, or even not even a phone? Like, you can only write letters to each other. You couldn't go see anybody, and everything got locked down. Like, at least we can see each other and talk to each other and, you know, do something.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean,
no, it's fine. No, it's, I mean, that's the world we live in, right? Like, there's an interesting, I've been reflecting on this whole thing too, obviously, because that's what you do, right?
We all are. It's human nature.
Yeah. So I don't know how to breach this subject without sounding a little bit like a dick, but I'm gonna go ahead and try.
Go for it.
So there's obviously a psychology of minority voices, right? Where there's a minority voice inside of this issue with the vaccine, or which I believe is a minority voice that is extremely loud, right? Where the voice of that minority says, no, I don't want to take this vaccine. Because I'm assuming that's a minority group of people, because I mean, obviously our numbers say otherwise. Our numbers say that the majority of the
population is vaccinated. Yes.
Exactly. But there's still a very vocal group of people who I consider are the minority that we have to acknowledge and listen to. Right.
Yeah.
Now extrapolate that farther into other social groups and other ways. It's interesting to see that the minority voice, like, okay. Most companies now probably have a COVID Slack channel or some type of channel to inform about what's going on, to be able to get that information going on. At larger companies, there are people who are very vocal in those channels, and there are some crazies, I'm not going to lie.
Of course. It's a slice of the population.
Where I'm trying to get to with this is, without sounding completely like it did, is I worry that that vocal minority is eroding away confidence and or just echo chambering themselves to be sound like they're louder than they really are. And then somebody in a decision-making space will go ahead and be like, hey, maybe we should listen. Or maybe this portion that maybe they brought up a point that we should actually pay attention to, even though we know that it's crazy over here. Like, how do we balance that as a culture? Because there's other places like in the larger scope of things, right? Not take out the vaccine or the all that stuff and just put it as social order, right? Mm-hmm. Like social order, maybe the minority's saying the right thing. We should pay attention to this more, right? But like, how do we balance that as a culture? Do you see what I'm asking?
Yeah, I do. I guess the thing that I'd point out is that this isn't a new problem. This isn't a problem that like suddenly magically came up now and has never happened in the history of the human race. Right. To me, like, I don't know. I've thought a lot about this myself, just because it's, you know, the question of what social media has done to us in some ways, mm-hmm. what the internet has done to us in some ways, because before, like, if there was one person who had a very wild idea that was not that great, they might mm-hmm. say it to some people and it immediately was told, no, that's not a good idea. And they never got affirmation. Pardon me, yep. on that idea. And so they never got that. And so it would slowly disappear from the consciousness, right? Whereas now exactly. it's a lot easier to find more people who will think the same wild idea, who will think the yep. same thing. And that can be fantastic in the sense of I came up with an innovation. And that can be detrimental in the sense of we're going to disrupt the social order. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with that in general? Well, part of it is people speaking up who are more moderate. Like, I think the majority of the population is more moderate than people think. I think it's just that it's a vocal minority on both sides. Mm-hmm. I think it's a vocal minority. And then you want to appear to fit in. So you then keep talking because you think that that's what you're supposed to do. But I also think that it takes people who aren't afraid to say, I'm not so sure about that. And to talk about it at their dinner table with friends, to talk about it in general, like mm-hmm. on Twitter, like I always see all kinds of different statements. And there's a number of them that I don't agree with that are very, 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 very far out there for me. And I might not talk about it on Twitter. But do I talk about it at home? Absolutely. Do I talk about it with my friends? Absolutely. You know, same thing on the other direction, you know, but I think the bigger problem is how do you continue to encourage the moderate voice? And I think the issue that we see is that we see these polls and we see all various things and the polls don't actually show the real people. They show the people who are willing to answer. And more that's the minorities. True. The minority voices, yeah. not I'm not saying minorities as in like racial minority or something like that. I'm talking about voice, the minority opinion. They're the people who respond to the polls. So yeah, of course, Fox News's polls says, you know, that no one wants to get vaccinated. And of course, like CNN's poll says that everyone wants to get vaccinated because those are the people who answer those people.
Exactly. Like,
I think that too often we've lost the ability to think critically on our own. And that's where I think the more we focus on teaching that and learning that and improving that ability to think on our own and think critically, to understand that there are biases in everything we look at, I think we'll get there. So from one ex-teacher.
that's brilliant. And that brings us back to the hope, right? Like, and you expressed that real hope, which is beautiful. I'm not going to lie. It warms my heart to hear that.
Well, I hope that is a good thing for you to start your day on then. How about that?
Yeah, no, it's great. And I guess you have to run. I'm gonna call you out on the actual podcast. Oh,
thanks, JJ. I have to cut the podcast short, but
yeah, but no, you know, it was a perfect place to end it though. It's a perfect place to end it.
Keep hoping. We got this. You got this. I got this. We all got this. Y'all enjoy. Absolutely. And I guess we're supposed to say bye.
Laura.
Bye.
Bye. Where's that button?